My name's Ken, obviously, and I'm an alcoholic. I have a sobriety date. It's July 27, 2007. I have a sponsor. I have a home group, obviously. I wouldn't be here if that wasn't the case. Having said that, like I said, I really like that you guys stayed at Set Aside Prayer because here's the thing, right? I hope that I'm only up here to share my experience, strength, and hope with you. You know, I'm not ignorant enough or naive enough to think that my experience is the only experience to be had in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a million and one ways to get sober here. I just hope that you find yours. You know, I don't know what your path may be. You know, it may be to fly through them. It may be to go slow as hell. It may be to do whatever, the polar opposite of what I did. But the reality of it is that the only thing that we truly need to find in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is a spiritual experience. The only way that we could find that is through the 12 steps. I mean, that's it. So whatever we do in between point A to point B of spiritual awakening is really our own choosing. And I learned, like, real early on in the beginning, like, when I first got sober, you know, like, I was really super, like, egotistical, and I was real young. I was only, like, 23, and when I discovered this experience, and I discovered this beautiful relationship with God, I felt like I was on fire. The thing about that, though, is a lot of times, like, when I feel so good, I start to cloud God's energy into some sort of selfish, self-centered, egotistical nightmare. And for about a year or two after that, when I discovered this experience, up to about the year two or three mark in sobriety, you know, what I was doing was beating people up with the big book in the rooms. You know, if you didn't do it, you know, the way that we, like my little collective clique, did things, then really you had no right to be here. And the reality of it is that every single person in this room has a right to be here, whether they're drunk right now or not, whether you're a day sober, whether you just went into the bathroom and hit your flask, you know, or whether you have 30 years sober. None of us have any right to judge anyone or say anything or say what is or what isn't, because there's a pretty big chapter that tells me, you know, I'm not God, and I really don't know what I'm doing. Actually, the first step tells me that, and if I don't know what I'm doing, how the hell am I supposed to tell you what you're doing? You know, which is a really beautiful thing about, and a beautiful gift about this program, is that, you know, if we're truly living in it, and we're truly living in the sunlight or of the Spirit, and trying to, you know, there's these things called spiritual principles that really help guide us, and you know, they're like laws. They don't defer, regardless of what our heads may say, or what people may tell us, or even what people's personal experiences may tell us. You know, and granted, I know that everyone in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is only here to help other people, but oftentimes I've learned from a very early on that if I start to let my experience direct people, a lot of times that's not the best thing. You know, I let my experience show people what I've done and where I've come from and where I'm hopefully going. But when it comes down to making true decisions, that is between you, that is between God, and that is between a spiritual principle. That's it. Should you choose to apply it, you'll reap the results of it. And if you don't, well, you'll definitely reap those rewards too. So having said that, you know, AA hasn't been the easiest for me. You know, I was like a frequent flyer in and out since I was 13, 12 maybe. My first rehab was Karen Foundation in Warnersville, Pennsylvania when I was 13. You know, great place, great facility. I'm sure that I would have got it if like I was ready to hear it, but I just really wasn't willing to change. I mean, I was only 13. I thought I had everything figured out, and, you know, that was my first experience in AA, and, you know, if there's anybody in the room right now that may feel unjust about some of the meetings they go to, or maybe how things are done, or the company that we keep around us, you know, just a short 10 years ago, man, like when I came to Rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, there was, you know, well, actually, I should go backwards, 20 years, because I was 13. So when 20 years ago, man, when I walked in my first meeting, like, it was totally different. You know, people weren't talking as openly about, you know, God and spiritual principles and sponsorship. And, you know, it was just a lot different, you know, and everybody in the room had me by their senior by at least like 20, 30 years. So if I felt like an alien out in the world and I needed to adjust myself back to life through alcohol, I really felt like an alien in these rooms without alcohol. And not that that is any reason that I did not stay sober, but we're really fortunate with the rooms that we have today, the message that's being carried today, and the people that are trying to do it. So I thank each and every one of you for you know, playing a part in that, because ultimately you helped save my life and you're going to help save millions of others. So yeah, I relapsed in and out for the better part of the next 10 years. I didn't get sober till I was 23. Now, I had time in between there, like, you know, like 6 months, 9 months, you know, a year, whatever the case may be. I had spent lots of time incarcerated. You know, I mean, if you didn't go to jail, like, if jail's not part of your story or getting arrested or whatever, like, you know, kudos to you, and I hope it never becomes part of it. But I will tell you, it was played a very big part in mine, and it didn't get me sober though. But it definitely, you know, drug me to the depths of hell that I've truly never known before. Let me break to you down like this, because I don't want to focus too much on that bullshit. You know, I was 13, getting in all types of trouble. By the age of 16, I had done enough that the state of Pennsylvania decided that the juvenile justice system just wasn't for me, and they certified me, tried me, and convicted me as an adult. So that's when I went to prison. I was 16. I spent the better part of 16, the age of 23, in and out of prison. I might have had maybe a year and a half street time. So that's that. You know, and it all centers around my inability to stop putting things in my body. You know, it had nothing to do with, at the time I thought it was, you know, I thought maybe it was my family. I thought it was, you know, whatever girl I was with at the time. I thought it was whatever, my friends. The reality of it was, is that it was just me, because, like, you know, when I would be sitting in like a little 6x8 thinking to myself, like, the things that I need to change about my life so that this never happens again, right? If I went in, you know, without a job, you know, with a girl, with that ball and chain wrapped around my ankle, and living at my parents' house, then I was thinking, I need to get a job. Let me cut her loose, and let me live on my own. But then when I go back, you know, if I had a job, didn't have a girl, and wasn't living at home, then I'm telling myself, like, I need to get a different job. Let me just find a girl that'll even me out and take care of me. You know what I mean? Like, keep me flying down a straight path. That's all I need, is just somebody to keep me in check. You know, and let her be nice and hot and pretty, and that will work out really good. You know what I mean? And if I don't have, like, if I'm not living at home, let me move back home with my parents. Let me be in a structured environment. Now, mind you, I'm telling myself, let me set myself up in a structured environment. Well, it doesn't get more structured than prison, you know? So if I can't, like, start, you know, doing this stuff in there, there's going to be some serious issues and problems when I hit the streets. Because what happens, right, is, and this is with everything, it happened every time, every detox I was at, every rehab I was at, every halfway house, and every prison. What happens is I get this stuff removed from my body, right? It's gone, and I think I'm okay, right? But what really happens, but I'm unaware of this, right? What really happens is this is when, see, my alcoholism isn't a problem when I'm out there getting it in. It really isn't. I'm perfectly okay with sacrificing my freedom, hurting you, hurting others. Totally okay with that. But when I stop, right, and then they tell me that, like, the issue is done now, and I'm convincing myself, you know, as long as I don't drink, we're cool, right? At that moment, when I stop drinking, this is when my war really begins. This is when the fight really starts to rage on inside of me. And I'm completely unaware of this. You know, I have no idea that my alcoholism, the fight with it, has now begun because I have just stopped treating it. You know, I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to be an alcoholic till the day I die. I'm going to have to treat it until the day I die. I could treat it with the numerous things. I could treat it with money. I could treat it with women. I could treat it with whatever, clothes, alcohol. You know, there's so many different things. So, like, I had no idea that, like, all this shit was going on inside of me. And then, like, it was just like when I would hit home, you know, I always had like the best ideas, man, like the best plans as to how I was gonna tackle this thing, and something would happen, you know, something, whether it was a phone call, whether it was just a feeling, whatever, it was, you know, one time I remember going back for my prison check, for my commissary check, and, you know, like, I was like, yeah, I'm going to do the right thing, because I worked in the kitchen at the time, I had a lot of money coming, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do the right thing. I walk in, they cut me my check, you know, on the way out, I remember I'm crying, I'm like tearing up, because I know that I'm not going to do the right thing, and this is where I really understood, I think, you know, without having a sponsor or the big book or someone in a meeting kind of describe, you know, the insanity and the obsession and the compulsion to, you know, just really have no power against it, was when I was coming out of there. Every part of me wanted to not drink. Every part of me wanted to, you know, take this money and get a little apartment and start doing the right thing for my daughter. But that didn't occur. What happened is when I got back in that taxi, I told them where to go, and I did what I had to do, you know. But it was such a rude awakening, man, because I was literally like hyperventilating, crying in the back of this taxi because I knew like what was getting ready to happen. I knew where the end of this road was. Like, I'm not an idiot. I'm not, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I know like what the end result will be. There's no like happy glorifying, like I could possibly drink like a normal human being. Like, I know that when I pick up, like within a week, I'm going to be kicking doors down. And within 2 weeks, like, you know, I'm going to be wanted. It's just that simple. So, like, I knew where it was going, man, and it sucked. It was scary. And, yeah, but thank God, like, see, God works in such mysterious ways, in such beautiful ways, right? I always thought that, that every time that I got in trouble, or every time that, somebody tried to stop me, like, you know, a police officer, or, you know, my parents, or a judge, or whatever the case may be, I always thought that, like, they were just, like, trying to, like, implement more control upon me, you know, that's what I thought, you know, and the reality of it is that God, or whatever you want to call him, I'm going to call him God, since I have the hour, and I'm up here at the podium, but God, right, as I understand him, you know, he manifests himself in millions of ways. Like, he shows up in the most random ass places at the most random ass times, sometimes doing the dumbest shit. You know what I mean? Sometimes he's holding my hand, walking me to where I need to go, and guiding me and telling me what I need to do. And sometimes he's completely making an ass out of himself, showing me that is definitely not the human being I want to be. You know, but he is everywhere. You know, it's just, what am I doing? Is my perception on point today? You know, and if I'm not seeing God, then there's a little bit of things that I need to start taking care of on the inside. You know, but no matter where I go, what I do, whatever, you know, he is everywhere. I mean, he is everything. He really is. And, you know, and I thank God for that. I really do. Thank God he never left me. You know, I left him so many times, you know, so many times. And for some ungodly reason, I asked myself this question, like, why he has found purpose for me in this world, and, you know, and why he chooses to call some of my other brothers and sisters home so early. You know, I battle with that a lot. You know, so what happened is I was sitting in jail, right? So this is where things really start to start rocking and rolling for me. So I was sitting in jail, right? And for the first time in my life, right? I don't know if you guys noticed or not. Some of you guys who have been around for a while definitely do. Some of you new guys and some of you guys who I know personally that are here tonight who have struggled coming in and coming out. You know, one of the things that I really had to grab a hold of, and I don't think it was possible for me to get sober until I did this, was learning, you know, not only to be responsible and take responsibility for my actions, but more importantly, be held accountable for them. You know, and I always, no matter what, like, it was always so easy to say, yeah, I messed up, or I'm going to try to do something different. You know, but to, like, look at something and say, yes, I did this, I destroyed this, and I deserve whatever is coming my way, because that is the type of person I was at that moment, despite who I may be right now. I still have to be held accountable for the things that I've done. And I remember these are like prayers that I'm saying to myself in prison every night, you know, because I was alone, man. I didn't at that last run, like I didn't have anybody, I didn't have anything. There was no commissary checks coming in. There was no visits. There was no phone calls. There was no letters. There was no nothing. You know, it was just me, my stinky ass Sally, and God. That's it. You know, and I wanted nothing to do with him, so it made a lot more sense for me to hit my knees and go upstairs. And that's what I did, you know, that's what I did day in, day out. I mean, he's, you know, I started to develop this contact with him before I really started rocking and rolling through the steps this time when I got sober. But, you know, I had enough experience. Like, again, I can't be that stupid and that naive to myself to say I don't know what I'm doing, because I do. You know, I've had plenty of experience in AA since I was 13. You know, I've heard it all. So, I mean, there's no reason why I cannot start applying this in this cell, in this institution, right here at this very moment. None. And if I choose not to, I'm already sealing my fate for when I walk out the doors. No matter what. That's just what it is. You know, remember, if you remember one thing from me tonight, please remember this. What you do today most certainly will determine what happens tomorrow. No matter what. You know, no matter what. And you may not pay those prices for a month, 3 months, 6 months, or a year. But if you drink again, or you stick a needle in your arm, or you do whatever it is, you know, when you take a good inventory of what led up to that moment, make sure you backtrack. Because it could be something as stupid as, you know, lying to your girlfriend, cheating at work on hours, or whatever, cheating on your, it could be the dumbest thing could knock us off of that spiritual beam. You know, and it's like, listen, if I move a quarter of an inch right now, it really doesn't make a big difference. But if I move a quarter of an inch and decide to walk that for a year and a half, you know, God is over here and I'm going to be like on the opposite side of the earth. So it does make it is kind of a big deal. You know, we may say to ourselves, I do it all the time. I still do it today. Thank God for good sponsorship. Thank God for friends that care more about my feelings than my life, you know, and call me out and tell me how it is. You know, I'm hurting people all the time today. You know, I really am. I'm not going to sit up here and tell you that I'm some AA guru, because I'm not. At times, I could live real dirty. You know, I'm not harming people in a sexual manner like I used to when I first was getting sober. You know, not this time, but I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've relapsed because I've come into rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and didn't search for God, didn't search for help, I searched for a girl. You know, I mean, that's just the truth. And I used them and I abused them. I mean, I didn't beat them, but I used them because they are a power source. It's just what it is. Just like a guy can be a power source to a girl. That's just what it is. You know, if I'm unwilling to find God, I'm going to sink my teeth into whatever is going to sustain me long enough until I either get sober or I get high or drunk, whatever. You know, I mean, that's just it. But I'm totally lost where I was going. Yeah, gone. But anyway, let me come back to reality here. I started developing this awareness with God before I had even gotten out. And let me tell you something, right? So, like, it's funny, because I hear, even with the guys that I sponsor, like, you know, I don't know, man, like, I'm trying to do everything. I just can't find a job, or, you know, things just ain't going my way. You know, and they've been, you know, complaining about it for like 3 months, and, you know, and they put in like 3 applications, and I'm like, dude, what are you doing, bro? Do you think that, like, you know, do you think that, like, a job is just going to come knocking on your door and say, hey, We've been waiting for you for a year. Will you please come and work for us tomorrow? No, it doesn't work like that. Like when we're out there doing what we're doing, right? Like the dope man didn't come to your door and say, hey, good morning, bro. Welcome. Here you go. Do your thing. See you tomorrow, kid. Never happened. You know what I mean? So like, if we want, like when we were doing what we were doing out there, it took, we had to take action to get the results, right? So we put it in. We did reckless, dangerous, nasty, degrading stuff to ourselves and to others to accomplish that feat of getting away from ourselves or getting out of ourselves. Well, the same principle applies in rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. See, the principles that we live by out there really aren't much different than what we're living by in here. It's just, we're just not hurting people. You know, it's all the same if you really think about it. It really is. So, like, if I want God, right, and I want Him to bless me, and I want Him to protect me and guide me, and more importantly, relieve me, then there's things that I got to do for Him. There's things that I got to do to show that, like, this is the real deal this time, that, like, I'm not just shooting up some foxhole prayers, that I'm not just, you know, bullshitting people so I could get out of wherever I'm at. Like, you know, I need to show Him that this is the real deal. You know, and I believe that when we start making decisions based upon His will as opposed to our own, and what He would want as opposed to what we want, I believe that this is when we really start to reap the rewards and the promises that this program really has to offer. You know, so sitting in that cell, man, I was charged up, trumped up really good, actually. And like, but there was a couple things, man, that, like, I don't know if you guys can relate to this. I'm sure that you can, but, you know, no matter what, like, whenever I do, like, things I'm not supposed to do, whether it's commit a crime or, you know, steal or, lie or cheat on a girl when I was out there, like, I would obsess in my mind about it, you know, forever, dude, until I gave myself something new to obsess about, you know, like, no matter what. And then even, see, the scary thing is that didn't change when I got sober, right? Like, all the other times when I got sober, like, yeah, it's all honky-dory that I'm hanging out in rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah, I may have a sponsor, and I may be feeling good about life, and I may be moving in the right direction, but if in the back of my head, all I'm thinking about is, like, you know, this really bad thing that I did, you know, a year ago. Well, you know, my sponsor told me, right? This is really cool. I think about this all the time. My sponsor told me, right? One of the things that can help me determine who or what I serve is dependent upon what I think most about throughout my day. You know, so it makes a lot of sense to me. If I'm thinking along the plane of God and selfishness and spiritual principles, then I'd have to say that I'm okay. You know, if I'm thinking about my girl that day, well, guess what? God's on the back burner, and that's who I'm serving today. You know, if all I think about is money and my job, I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that that's your higher power. You know, so like I didn't want to give anything else any power that I actually had control over, you know? So, like, I don't know, man. I it was time to, like, get clean with everything. So, you know, my parents and my attorney were like, this kid is, like, what are you, high in prison? Like, what are you thinking? Because I told him, I was like, listen, have the attorney come because I have to talk to you about some stuff. There's a couple cases that are out there that, you know, I kind of need to let them know that it was me. And they're like, no, like, what are you doing? And I'm like, what I need to do, you know, this is my path, my journey, just let me walk it, you know? And I remember telling my attorney that, cause she told me I was crazy too. And, I was like, listen, you get paid to do, you don't get paid to ask. So do, like, set it up, make it happen. And let's see what happens. You know, and here's the cool thing, right? So again, I think, again, literally it's all about, like, you know, are we going to make a decision based off of love or you know, something right and a spiritual principle of truth? Or am I going to continue to make decisions based on fear like I have my whole life? You know, because I could tell you what, I did not, you know, come into these rooms by making the right decisions. I didn't come in here by doing the right thing. You know, I wasn't an all-star fucking citizen out there and, you know, decided that I have nothing better to do with my time than to come and hang out in AA for 10 years. You know what I mean? Wasn't my choice, but this is where I am. So, here's what happened. I go, and it's amazing what happens when you're not an asshole, right? And, like, it really is. It's amazing. And it's even more beautiful is that I found out that, you know, I used to have a real problem with authority and with police and, well, really everyone, except for myself. But they seemed to like be just a normal human being too. Like all they did was just, you know, they had a job, man. They put on a uniform. They went to work. They were just trying to feed their kids. They were just trying to do the right thing. And more importantly, they were trying to protect their kids and they were trying to protect their family from scumbags like me. So when I came to the realization that that's all that they were doing, you know, and then they seen me doing something that I had never done before my whole life, which was be held accountable for my actions and allow myself to be held accountable for my actions, things started to take a turn. You know, all of a sudden, like, the ball that had always been spinning that way suddenly started to, like, slow down a little bit and start to go this way a little bit. And I remember getting arraigned, and usually, like, no matter what, like some dumbass charge will always be trumped up with, like, 8 other ones just because, not because I deserve, well, it is because I deserve, but just because I was acting like an ass. That's it. Or because I, you know, I'm, like, Mr. Tough Guy in an interview room, you know what I mean? Or whatever the case may be. And I go from what I think is one little charge to, you know, 9,000. And I'm going in front of all these magistrates getting arraigned and, you know, and I'm not getting racked on charges. And you know, and some of them too, like, you know, like there's a couple felonies and they're like just letting them go. And I'm just like letting this one go over to court. So it was like really like kind of crazy to see like this start to happen. I'm just like blown away, you know, by this whole thing. And, you know, I was about 9 months in, maybe 10 months in, and it was time for me to get sentenced, you know. And I was ready, man. I was ready for, like, we had sentencing on Wednesday. I was hoping that he sentenced me to an immediate state transfer, that way I was on a state bus by either Thursday or Tuesday. Like, I just wanted to get out of the county and go back to state, just get me up there. And I, like, that's all I wanted the attorney to do. So we go for sentencing, and, you know, I go up there, I go, you know, my family's there, my attorney's there, and, you know, whatever, they're doing their thing. So I get up there, and I kind of skipped the whole part, sorry. Let me backtrack. About a week before my sentencing, so my arresting officer, on two of my heaviest cases, that involved, like, some really bad shit, he ended up getting arrested, right? And he kind of compromised everything from like a point set time to like point time of him getting arrested, and it just so happened that I happened to be in that window, so it worked out really well. Well, but the thing is, right, is and here's the kicker, right? And I swear to God, this is how it went down. Like, I'm not trumping it up. I'm not trying to. I could care less if you believe me or not. 90% of y'all never see again. But the reality of it is that, like, I went up in front of the judge, and he looks at me, and he's like, you know, you're pleading? Because my attorney wanted me to pull my plea, and I was like, no, I was like, no, I'm not pulling my plea. And he's like, well, are you aware of, you know, what had transpired over last week? I was like, I'm very aware of what has been going on over the last week, but, you know, I was like, Your Honor, I was like, either way, what he has done doesn't differentiate between what I have done. Like, I'm here because of the things that I have done, you know, and, like, I did this, so do what you got to do, that's it, you know. And I just bowed my head, and, like, and then he called up my attorney, and he called up the ADA, and they were talking, and then they started running my charges out, you know, and he started sentencing me to, like, 9 to 23, like, 1 to 2, 1 to 2, 1 to 2, and he said, so I had about, like, 11 charges, 12 charges, and he gave me all those, right? And then he combined everything, ran everything concurrent, gave me credit for time served, and then bounced me over to work release for the last 2 months of my parole. And then included in the thing that I go to AA every day. Like, so I was allowed to leave and go to meetings. And then he gave me childcare furloughs. So all I did, right, for the last 2 months while I was in prison was I woke up, I went to work, then I went and hung out with my kid, then I went to an AA meeting, and then my family brought me back to jail at 10 o'clock at night, and I slept. And then I got up at 6 the next day and left. So I went from, now, the gun charges carried a mandatory minimum. So I was looking at something serious to, in 2 months, I was out. You know, so like, this is the point. I cannot stress this enough. If there are things that, now I'm not, I don't recommend this to like the guys I sponsor. I'm not like, yo, bro, you know, I know you got a ton of shit out there. Let's go knock on the cop's door and, you know, let's get it done. You know what I mean? Like, I don't recommend that. And I'll make a full disclaimer right now. I cannot guarantee that will happen for you. But that's something you need to talk to your sponsor about and God. But the point that I'm really trying to make, man, is that like, if you're willing to sacrifice yourself for him, you know, I put my sobriety date on it that he is more than willing to sacrifice himself for you. And he will, you know, ultimately, he will fulfill everything you need. He will give you everything that you need. He may not give you everything you want, but he will give you everything that you need. And this really started like the fundamental process of my foundation and my belief with God. And I honestly believe that I'm so grateful that it worked out the way it did, because I don't believe that unless I had this super solid foundation with him first, prior to going through like 4 through 12, I really don't think that I would have had the same experience. I don't think that, you know, I don't think that I would be here right now. You know, I'm a fan for, you know, taking things slow, and I'm a fan for flying as fast as we can go. Whatever you want to do, whatever you're comfortable with. You know, like I said, there's a different flavor of AA for everybody. But the one thing I do know is that big book covers a lot of ground, you know, in pages 1 to 63 or 64. And it's only 3 steps. There's only 40 more pages for the next 8. So maybe this relationship with God thing and trying to, you know, get that shit taken care of before embarking on a serious journey of self-discovery might be something you might be willing to take a look at. Just because, again, I don't think I would have discovered what I needed to find, and more importantly, what I needed to change and who I needed to become had I not done that. Now, again, that's my experience. I'm not saying that if you have done it in any other way, shape, or form, you know, by all means, there is no right or wrong way. There's only a way. So just do it. Find it however you can. You know, and getting back to, like, this deal with, like, how I told you earlier about, like, what we do today kind of determines what we're going to reap tomorrow, you know? I'm going to touch base on a couple of real key points, and then I really want to talk to you about some of the bad shit that happened in AA, to let you know that no matter what comes down the pipe, like, we can do this. So when I had gotten out, right, I still wasn't allowed, like, even though, like, I had the childcare furloughs, like, I seen my daughter around my family. You know, and my kid's mom had every right to not want me to be alone with my kid, because I had kind of deserted her for her first, you know, 4 or 5 years of her life. I mean, that's just the truth. I was never a father. I was a sperm donor until, you know, I got out and got sober. That's the truth. You know, so I didn't even ask for things like, you know, overnights or going and do stuff with her. What I did was I started to do things that, you know, you're supposed to do, you know, like pay child support and things like that. So I got caught up in all that stuff. Like, I just started doing things that I had never done before, you know, like, you know, guys, this isn't, I tell my sponsees this all the time too, because I swear to God, they're like little puppies, right? When they start doing the right things and they're like looking for like everyone's approval. Like, the reality of it is that we're really not doing nothing special here. Like, I'm not anyway, you know, like, you know, me not robbing you isn't like, hey, good job, Ken. You know what I mean? or, you know, me not having sex with your girlfriend is I don't deserve a pat on the back for that. You know, me not living like a scumbag today doesn't warrant like a little merit award hanging on my wall. You know, what we're all doing here is we're living the way that every other human being on the face of this planet is living. You know, we're doing what we're supposed to do. You know, we're supposed to live like this. We're not supposed to harm people. We're not supposed to drink ourselves to oblivion. We're not supposed to beat our wives. We're not supposed to not be there for our children. We're not supposed to rob people. We're not supposed to do those things. So I tell my guys this all the time, right? Instead of looking for, you know, like that pat on the back and the appraisal, man, like, why don't you just try, like, doing shit just for the sake of doing it? That's it. Because if you're looking for anything else, man, it's all self-gratification, and we absolutely know where that ends. No matter what. No matter what. It was probably about a year that I was out, because I went to a recovery house on my own will, too. That was something really, really new to me, like doing things for my sobriety without being forced to, or court-ordered to, more importantly. It was a really weird experience, just, you know, making decisions, you know, for myself, you know, in the right direction. It was just totally strange, but it felt really good, and I felt on fire for life, and things were just amazing. And, you know, I had like, there were all these things that were going on in my daughter's life and with her mom and with the, you know, with the people that she would choose to date and eventually marry. I remember my sponsor, because I wanted to go in and I wanted to kind of save my kid, right? Now, mind you, I'd never been there to begin with, but all of a sudden I'm like, you know, Superman and you know, dad of the year, and coming in here and let me save the world. And, you know, my sponsor was just like, listen, man, just relax, chill out, you know, don't get involved, like, it's not your business. You know, it'll become your business when it needs to be. And that's a really difficult thing to understand and learn and apply. Like letting God do what he needs to do until he decides to invite you into whatever the mess may be or whatever the good thing may be. You know, and I really wanted to get involved a few times. Sometimes, like, through court. Sometimes, you know, with his face going through the middle of the fucking ground. Excuse my language. I don't know about cursing in here. But there was so many, like, I was so, you know, my daughter is my world, and I wanted to kill this guy that she was with. And it wasn't because of her. It was because of the way that he treated my daughter, you know, and because of the things that my daughter would tell me she was witnessing. And it was, you know, that's the one thing I could say is that if my daughter would respect me for one thing while I was drinking and doing all the scummy things out there, I hope that she would respect me for the fact that I just simply didn't come around and I didn't bring it near her. And I didn't bring it in the house. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I was like, I left. But this stuff was going on all around her. And it crushed me because there was nothing I could do. Really, there was nothing I could do without, you know, creating more harm. You know, and this was something new that I was learning too. But what had happened, right? Through lots of prayer and meditation, lots of guidance, lots and lots of time on the phone with the sponsor and trying to figure things out. What had happened is an opportunity presented itself, just like he said it would, just like, you know, like God always has. And, you know, for the last 8 years, man, I've had my, you know, I've had full custody of my little girl. It's a pretty cool deal. And, like, it's just been the most beautiful experience. It's just been me and her, like, you know, she has blossomed into, she turns 15 tomorrow. She has blossomed into the most beautiful thing that I've ever seen in my life. Like, I didn't think that there was any other higher purpose other than serving you guys in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous until the day that she moved in with me. And then that's when I kind of realized, you know, that my purpose in life is much bigger, much bigger. And it's been a gift. She's been an absolute blessing, and she has definitely, you know, helped me grow spiritually. She has definitely helped me grow spiritually. Yeah, there's no doubt about that, man. She's a great kid, but you know, God bless you women out there. You know, God bless you. I'm so grateful I am not you. So grateful. But so it was really cool that, you know, that kind of worked out, you know, again, like everything kind of always does, you know, as long as we kind of just chill out and step back and do the right. I really apologize for cursing earlier, that saying the F-bomb. That's it. All I'm thinking about right now is dropping that F-bomb earlier. But anyway. But I believe, right? I'm a firm believer. And again, I'm going to get back to, I just really needed to touch base on that one, because that's like one of the most pivotal, most beautiful things that occurred in my sobriety. But I believe that the things that we do every day, good and bad, you know, will help prepare us for what lies ahead in the future. And a lot of us know in the room who have been sober for a while, who have been sober for a while, maybe relapsed, who have been sober and just continuously relapse, whatever the case may be. You know, but we know that that life is out there. We know that life is going to come at you, and it's going to come hard. You know, life is not a bowl of peaches, and it's not all butterflies and rainbows and unicorns. See, I stopped myself. And unicorns, it's not. You know, and I believe that the work that we do every day, from the time that we make this conscious decision to turn our will and our lives over to Him and start taking care of ourselves and hopefully developing this awakening, I believe it's all in preparation for what lies ahead. You know, because here's the deal, right? The only thing that's different between me and the guy that's relapsing right now at this moment is that his desire to get high is greater than his desire to stay sober. You know, and I hope that by the things that I do every day, that my desire to stay sober, you know, definitely outweighs my desire to get high. Because at some point, there's going to be something that comes down the pipe that is going to totally rip our world into a million pieces. And the only thing that's going to be capable of sustaining us is going to be our relationship with God. How much work we have put in, what we have done. You know, everything compiled. Because here's the reality. There's not always meetings for us to go to. There's people don't always answer the phone. You know, you're not going to have some new guy to try to suck the life out of to make yourself feel better until you get okay. You know what I mean? You're going to reach a point where it's just going to be you, God, and a decision. So really, at that moment, what's going to determine whether or not you drink and get high is going to be the work that you've put in with your relationship with God. I mean, it's just that simple. You know, and we know, you know, what'll happen. I mean, you'll know firsthand whether you drink or not. So, like, and you know, about 4 years ago, life came so unbelievably hard and so left field. It was crazy. Almost died a few times. So I got real sick. I ended up going into the hospital I was in and out of the hospital for like, I don't know, 2.5 years, maybe. Yeah, about 2.5 years. I had 8 surgeries total. Like I said, I almost died twice. The second surgery, like, I just didn't wake up for like months. I developed like meningitis, and it was just, it was so disgusting. He actually showed up at my house with Farnsworth, and when I was sick, and when I mean sick, like, can't walk sick, like, you know, 170 pounds sick, like, I'm 270 right now, like, this is my normal weight, this is my normal size, like, it was just disgusting, and, you know, everything, when this happened, my whole life changed in AA, in life, period. Even my relationship with God completely changed. That in a good way. The rest I'm still trying to come to terms with. You know, because I was a super active guy. Super active in AA. Super active outside of AA. I loved going to the gym. I was involved in so many different sport leagues. And I was involved in things with my daughter. And, you know, and doing stuff with her with soccer and with basketball. And, like, I was just involved in so much stuff. Like, my life, look, I'm getting ready to vape in the middle of a meeting. Oh, my God. But, like, I had all this stuff, like, like my whole life, even because my dad, well, my pop owned the construction company, passed it on to my dad. You know, I was next in line for. I mean, that day I've never worked anywhere else but for them. Like everything I did revolved around physical activity, everything. And I got sick, and the stuff started happening with my brain and my spine. And you know, needless to say, you know, by the end of it, like. You know, I was like bedbound and wheelchair bound for like 3 years. You know, I remember speaking at meetings and they were carrying me from their car, you know, and like, but I, you know, the cool thing is that I didn't stop, you know, when I was in the hospital, right. Like the guys were coming down and like, I was doing step work, like while I was in the hospital bed, you know, I remember waking up, right. Because here's the deal. I had my spinal cord completely ripped out of my back. Yes, they had morphine ripping into my arms. But I remember I woke up crying, right? And my mom and my dad and my daughter were like, "What is wrong with you?" You know, and they call the nurse, and I'm like crying, and they're like, "What is wrong?" And I'm like, "Nothing," you know. And they're like, "Why are you upset?" I'm like, "I'm not upset. Like you guys have a morphine drip in my arm." And it's like working. It's treating pain, and I'm not, you know, I'm not all like that. And more importantly, I'm not like, you know, I'm not thinking about it. I'm not obsessing about it. You know, I'm not like with the little clicker, like, you know what I mean? I'm not. It's just like whatever is happening, it's happening. And you know, like it was amazing to, you know, not have that obsession there, you know, and I was in such a dark and a cold space because of everything that had happened. You know, here's the thing is that sometimes, even when we think God's not there, we just have to find him. We have to look for him, you know what I mean? Like I woke up on my deathbed, my life is forever changed, you know, so what choice do I have? Like, do I want to sit around in my own pile of shit and eat it and swallow it and, you know, gloat and tell the whole world, you know, poor me and pity me, or do I want to try to find something good in this, you know, because I have to, because if I don't, like, I didn't get sober to suffer, man. Like, I get sober to live, you know, and I might not be able to do the things that I used to be able to do, but I'll tell you one thing. There are things that I am doing today that I never thought I would have done 4 years ago, and it's opening up a whole new world for me in so many different aspects. So, like, this thing that was the most destructive thing that has happened to me since I got sober has now turned into one of the most positive things that's ever occurred in my life, and we are helping people all over the country now, which is pretty cool because, you know, we opened up a huge vape company and killer e-liquid company, and it's like national and it's like global, and we're in magazines, and we, you know, last year, like we were in Vegas, we're in Miami, we're in Orlando, we're in Connecticut, we're just all over the country, you know. It's just, I mean, next week we're opening up a vape shop, a new manufacturing facility, like, so, you know what I mean? Like, it really is dependent upon like the set of glasses that I decide to put on that day. You know, do I want to wear a pair of glasses that, you know, poor me and I want to kill everyone around me? Or do I want to put on a set of glasses that shows me this perceptive beauty around me? You know, that's really it. If I play this game, I'm going to shut up with this. I play this game, right, with my sponsees. When they call me, like, crying about life and whining about everything, like, everything, you know, everything. I just ask them, like, you know, well, I ask him one question. Where's God in all this? Because we haven't talked about that yet. You know what I mean? Like, here's the deal. Like, you know, like, do we want to go to God with, like, all of our problems and, like, try to dump them on him? Or, like, I would prefer to you know, tell my problems and show him how big my God is. You know what I mean? That's what I like to do. You know, because the reality of it is if we dwell on the problem, we're going to be the problem. But if we beat the problem up with some, you know, some power, some God, some spiritual principles, like, you know, it doesn't last long. If we don't give something the power to live, it ain't going to live. I mean, it's just that simple. So if I feed self-pity, I'm going to be disgusted with life. You know, if I feed it good stuff, I'm going to be feeling great. You know, and we play this little game. And it's called, like, Where's Waldo? And this is what I tell him, right? I'm just like, listen, I want you to tell, instead of calling me every day and telling me about your problems, I want you to tell me where you have looked and where have you found God throughout your day. That's what we're going to talk about. You know, and then I hang up the phone, that's it. And then they call me the next day, and I start to get them to focus on the solution and start to get them to focus on positivity, you know, and the good things in life. And it's amazing because all it is nothing's changed. They still have the same shitty problems, just like I do. Still have some of the same shitty people around us. But what's changed is the way that I'm viewing them. What's changed is my ability to see what's going on around me as opposed to all that other negative stuff. So I really want to take the opportunity to thank you guys for having me down here and allowing me to speak and give me an hour of your lives. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken.